Welcome to the Prickly Couch podcast, where three mujeres have real conversations. We'll share our stories and talk about wellness, familias, work, and everything in between in our experiences as Latina women.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. We are going to be talking today about neuroaffirmative care, what that means, and how we apply those principles into trauma therapy and assessment in our practice at Prickly Pear. And so for today, I have my good friend and co-founder, Dr. Serrata, who you remember from previous seasons.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here again with you today and talk about this very, very important topic.
Yes, I'm excited that we're jumping into this. For context, we decided to do this series this year because we have been, I think, sitting with our processes in our practice, and we've had conversations, deep conversations around accessibility and equity. And a big part of that is providing affirmative care. And so we'll be talking about what that means as a big umbrella, but also for today, we're going to be diving into neurodivergence and neuroaffirmative areas and how we integrate that into what we do.
Yeah, and I wonder if it would be helpful, going a little off script, to talk about our training background, because I don't think, you know, a lot of folks really know what psychologists are, what we do, and what our training is, so that this topic isn't left field, right? That each of us has training in doing neuropsychological assessments and what that, you know, means. I think sometimes for folks, it could feel like, wait, where's your expertise in this, or where did this come from, right? That we actually have, as part of training as psychologists, pretty extensive training, depending on department and program, you know, that background that we bring, and then of course our personal lived experiences. But I think it maybe share a little bit more about where this comes from in terms of our own backgrounds, our own training backgrounds, if you want to start, Gabby, and give a little bit of that history. It could be helpful for folks to understand, you know, what our, you know, expertise and, you know, experiences in this area is.
No, I think that makes total sense. So as clinical psychologists, we receive, you know, training in different areas, right? One being therapy and direct services, another area or branch being research, and another area being assessment, and what the assessment and evaluation for folks. And what that means is that we get trained on what does it mean, right, to assess, and what does it mean to apply different processes for that assessment. So what do we mean by assessment? It is a comprehensive process where we administer different measures, and we're trained into understanding the psychometrics and the application of those different measures to understand the constraints behind those measures, right? Look, so how we're measuring, what we're measuring, why we're measuring that, and then read the information that those tests throw at us, and integrating all those findings to complete the picture of someone based on the interview that we have with them, the conversations we have with them, their histories, and then their performance on those measures. So we get a few years on training, both as in classes to talk about these concepts in this class kind of way, right? And very intellectual and cognitive kind of way. And then we get also years of administrating these measures directly to first voluntary participants to help us train, and then to actual clients and people that come to our clinics. In our programs, there's different ways that we'll do that. Most psychology programs will have a department clinic where folks come in and then they get assessed there by students under the supervision of licensed clinical psychologists, where we get a lot of training administering, interpreting, but then writing that in a concise manner for folks. And then for some folks that ends there, and then they go into more extensive training in some of the other areas, like in clinical or research. But I think a lot of us then get a lot of experience later on in the program to specialize on assessment. And there's clinical psychologists that specialize in assessments that are neuropsychologists, and that what they do is living and breathing this, right? And understanding the biological impact of different processes and things that happen in our brains, and how to show up in testing, how to assess for it, and then how to address it with different interventions. And clinical psychologists focus on diagnostic, right? So doing testing to understand what somebody's big picture is, if they might meet criteria for different diagnoses, recommendations, interventions to kind of enhance what they're already doing in therapy, or for medication management, what is needed. And then we also have some other piece that might be more related to learning differences, right? If for some folks, they're having some difficulty in school or work with attention, concentration, or something that is impacting their interpersonal relationships, clinical psychologists are trained to assess for that and be able to have a conversation around that. So that is the background of our training. We're both clinical psychologists. And so we've had that training, and we both had advanced experience with assessment through our internship, which is our last year of applied work that we get through our programs. And usually that is about, just to put it in perspective, almost 2000 hours of applied work that we do during that year. And then some of us might go into postdoc or other positions where we go even deeper. So we got experience in that in training. And part of what we've been doing in our practice for a while is to start bringing in that element of assessment and evaluation for folks. And we started working on providing assessments for folks that have experienced trauma to really understand how it impacts them. And what are some of the recommendations that we can do for treatment and medication management? And in the past year, we decided to expand that in a more, how would I say it? Not necessarily intentional, but I think we're doing more of what we were doing, to focus on learning differences and new divergence, and being able to diagnose folks, identify folks that are having certain difficulties, and understanding the impact and understanding what can be helpful, and be able to identify services and resources for them. I would say everybody in our practice is an adult or about to become an adult. So they're older adolescents. And so a lot of our testing has been focusing on either folks that have had some difficulties or have noticed that there's something that is not totally connecting with them, and wanted to learn more about what that might be, how that is showing up in their lives. Mm-hmm. And then what can we do about it, right? What is helpful so that they can get their needs met?
I think, Gabby, one of the things that sets us apart and it's important, right? I was fortunate enough to have extensive training with multicultural psychologists that married not only multiculturalism and our understanding of the diversity, but also neuropsychology, right? So we bring in it that filter and that lens of context, of culture, of, you know, some of the tools that we may use not being developed, for example, with the populations that we work with. But then how do you start to still take that learning that can be very useful to individuals? So I think for us, like, we really come from it from a social justice lens. It's not like we want to pathologize. We don't want to, you know, we're not actually for that, using assessments for those reasons. But it is from, you know, my own personal experience in La Comunidad, right? There are tools here that can be helpful to individuals in navigating systems, right?
Right.
So thinking of it in that way, and I think that's, you know, the element that we bring, right? Because I know there can be a pushback against evaluations, assessments, diagnostics, of course, GLIO, because they've been used very horrifically against our communities and BIPOC communities, especially in this country. There is an egregious history here that we have to acknowledge and you know, name, right? That's right. Important. And, you know, from my own experience as a mama with a two learning difference children and neurodivergent kids, we're still in these systems that speak this language, right? And so how do we bridge that, right, of being able to, like, it's kind of like empowerment, using these tools to be able to gain the knowledge that you know about yourself, right, about your children and how our beautiful brains operate, right, in the context of, you know, in the context of culture. But then how do we use these tools to help us advocate for our needs, right, and advocate and become empowered, be able to build our understanding in these ways, right? So it's not one or the other. And I think oftentimes it can feel that way, that, you know, we're either, you know, one of those psychologists that's over here pathologizing everyone, mm-hmm. right? Or we're totally not, right? We throw it out. We don't want to use it at all. But what we're saying is that we intentionally have done the training and we continue to do the work and the unpacking, so that we can come from it from a place that is empowering, right. In that way for the individuals who we work with. And we do it in partnership and in collaboration. I think that's another piece that's important to point out, right? It's not just, you're going to come in and we're going to give you some assessments and then we're going to be like, here's your diagnosis, good luck, right? Like, mm-hmm. We sit with you, we talk with you, we learn about your culture, we learn about your history, we learn about your traumas, right? Like all of that is in the collaboration and mutually coming to a place of like, this is what we're now, how we think can think about your brain, right? We can think about your history and we can think about how these things are showing up for you, and again pivot into what is the response here, how can you advocate for yourself, what do you need, right, to feel like you can be the thriving, holistic, beautiful person that you want to be in this world with all of its nuance.
Well, and I think that, yeah, I mean, we did all the training to figure out like and be caught up and learn and be aware, right, of the state of the field. And then I think we've done extensive preparation, extensive learning on how do we grab what we have, right, and adapt it for our folks. And we change the way that we do assessment processes to make them accessible, to make them collaborative. I think, and that is one of the reasons why we started this piece, was because, yes, we had training and all of that. And we were focused on clinical services, direct clinical services. So individual therapy, family therapy, those kinds of things. And one of the things that we noticed was that we were getting calls from folks asking about assessments. And some of our colleagues were saying, hey, are you doing assessments? Because we need someone that understands not only the trauma lens and understand how trauma shows up in our communities, or honestly in folks in general, but then can have this lens in culturally grounded care, in cultural norms, right? In how the presentation of these different things can be different across our community members. How does being bilingual impact those results, right? How does experiencing trauma can impact those tests that were not developed for folks like us or for our communities or for our clients that we have in the practice? So somebody that can really not only do the assessment, but contextualize and read those findings based on the individual that we have in front of us. And I think in the conversations of everybody or the majority of clients that I've had, it's not about just having having a label or getting to a diagnosis. Sometimes there is curiosity. And I think there's, for folks that really want that label, is really about validation, right? Like there is a tangible name for what I'm experiencing that feels different than people around me. There is a name. It's not in my head. It's not something that I'm doing for attention. It's not something, or it's not that I have 15 diagnoses that can be falling into one, you know, one thing that explains all these different things that I'm seeing about myself. And then there is the resource part. Unfortunately, we're still part of a system, right? We still live in this capitalistic society that has all this bureaucracy, right? And so if I want to get access to those resources that I might need to be able to show up fully, right, and be able to use all of my potential and get the things that I need, unfortunately, I might need a formal assessment by a psychologist in this particular way, so that they say, right, that they see these things and I can get those resources. What does that mean? So for kids in school, that means that they might need a formal assessment to be able to access their individual education plans to be able to get accommodations. That means that as an adult, you might need that for your job to be able to then provide accommodations. Or that might mean that as a graduate student or a college student, that you need to bring that to your Office of Accessibility to say, hey, this is my experience, right? And it's approved by someone that has this degree. And then they can provide you with those things that you need to make these environments equitable. And for people to be able to be in those spaces, right, and actually be able to get what they need, but also means being able to get disability, right, unemployment, all these kinds of benefits that we all should have access to, and we don't, and we need sometimes these assessments to be able to validate our experience in this very particular way.
I would say that was our camp, right? We fell in that. We needed to go through a formal assessment. And for us, the bilingualism, right, from my child, my oldest who started the process, I wasn't quite clear, right? Was it a language thing? Was it articulation thing? You know, he was bilingual. He, you know, spoke both language and was fully immersed in Spanish his first few years. And so when at school, we started seeing, you know, this difference is like, I'm not convinced, right? I need to know, and I need someone who's going to be able to do this assessment to show, right? Is it, right, to rule out, like, is it beyond, you know, the language? Is it beyond the biculturalism? And that was our case. We had to have it, you know, him formally evaluated. And then when my second came, we did the same thing with him so that we could, like you said, go to the school and navigate that system and get in place the resources that my children need for their learning styles, right? And so that was, you know, thankfully, we, you know, I'm in the field, right? But even with that, I still needed a lot of support to navigate. And we consulted with other psychologists, and we, you know, we like got the support that we needed because it is so overwhelming. So we can do a separate episode on just the parenting perspective and how it is to navigate systems in that way. But I, you know, definitely resonate with that of knowing, like, you know, and so many individuals do need to go that formal route because they might have little ones that are still in the system, or they might, you know, have realized in undergrad, and then now they want to go to grad school, and they're like, hey, you know, I want to put something in place to support me, right? This shouldn't have been this hard, right? Mm-hmm. And so we hear a lot of that as well. So there are, you know, like you said, there are benefits. There's definitely benefits of it, and we can acknowledge, right, the history of where it comes from and the systems, and still be very critical and challenging of those systems for sure, and use it as a tool to empower and support the individuals who we work with to navigate the systems that they're embedded in.
Yeah, and that is something that we do through, I think a lot of those conversations do happen in our process, and they happen during consultation. So folks usually call us for an initial consultation saying, hey, you know, I need this kind of assessment, do you do it? And then we have a conversation not only about our process, but what is the question that we're trying to answer? And it's been frequent that folks will ask me, okay, what are the downfalls, right? Like, what are the pros of getting an assessment? What are some of the things that I need to have in mind before kind of jump here? Aside from like the regular barriers that we talk about, right? Like money, insurance, do you do those assessments? And do you have experience with people that don't present in this traditional way? that other clinicians might be trained on, or like most clinicians are trained on? Do you consider, you know, my culture and the different things in how this might show up differently? And then for the recommendations and supports, right? Like, can you add something, right, to that piece that might be helpful? And then the other side is for when providers contact us and they want to know more about how they can support their clients. A lot of folks get referred that way. One of the things that I think is helpful and important to consider is that when we're making these recommendations for neurodivergent folks, and we're talking about interventions, there are very mainstream interventions that are very almost like accepted as the way that the field is, right? Or the gold standard in this particular way. But are there interventions that we can do that are gonna be helpful and not harmful to our communities, not re-traumatizing to our communities? So when we're making those recommendations or when we're doing the assessment, can we or are we going to add those considerations and adaptations for trauma therapy or for whatever other intersection our clients might be? So I think that's a big piece of what we do, right, is bring that intersectional lens to understand for our clients who are neurodivergent, what is actually helpful? What are some of the things that for example, the autistic community has identified as harmful, right? Or that through research, we know that is harmful, and making sure that we're not recommending that. And making sure that we're having collaborative conversations about, okay, so we have this diagnosis, what does that mean for you, right? Like, what does that mean for your identity? Who do you wanna share this with or not, right? And really do a lot of conversation about processing what this means, right? And then, provide resources that might be helpful. And then how do we communicate that with other providers? How do we write about that in a report? Because sometimes, and we were talking about this the other day, we get training through writing these reports that are beautiful and beautifully detailed for other clinicians that are not helpful to the person that is receiving that report, right? I don't think that anybody that is getting those reports outside of our field gives a shit about what a standard deviation from the norm is. So some of that information is not gonna be helpful for the person who the report is for. I mean, of course, if there is a reason why people are getting this report and the report is gonna be read by and for someone that needs that, we can do it, right? But if we having into consideration who the report is for, what information they need, and being able to integrate in a way that is like for everybody, it's accessible. That's another thing that it is important.
Yeah, and there's a big movement towards that. You know, I see on some of the Facebook groups for tested psychologists, like different examples. And I know you've revamped completely our, you know, reports that we provide for folks. So that they are more accessible in and of themselves, right, and understandable. So for you, Gabby, what does it mean for you to be, like, when you hear the term neuroaffirmative provider, what resonates with you? How do you describe that?
I think it's having a lens and understanding of what neurodivergence is and isn't. It's having an understanding of our common myths and biases about what neurodivergence is and how it shows up. And then I think of, again, that part around resourcing, right? That we know what are some of the things that are helpful, the things that are actively harmful. And that we are connected with the voices of people that have lived experience and not just the written word of research, right? Because we can go on a whole episode about the limitations of the research that we have available. There's value, some value to it, but there's also some significant limitations around that. And so I think that being connected with folks that is their experience, right? Like they can integrate all the, you know, high level findings that we have, they're living it. And so understanding the realities of that and also understanding the systems around all of that, all of the ways that neurodivergence impacts people's lives. Having that lens and be able to provide care from there, it let it be assessment of therapy. That's what being a neuroaffirmative provider means to me.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say some of the challenges are? I mean, I know that this is like the field has been here, but the field, I think because of social media and right, like TikTok videos, honestly, right? So many folks with neurodivergent identities, right? Intersecting identities, like have voices and folks are resonating like, oh shit, you mean that's more of my experience than yes, my trauma, my history there. And there's this thing that I resonate with, right? Like there's such a bigger movement. We're hearing the term neurodiversity more in like layman's term. Like we're hearing it so much more. Folks are using that language more, neuroaffirmative care, right? Like there's this big movement and push, which is beautiful and wonderful. And what are some of the challenges that you're seeing or that you've faced in being a neuroaffirmative provider?
Well, I think in some ways, I'm lucky that I've been able to connect with people because of my degree or because of my experience. I've been able to connect with folks that are, that are offering community and consultation, all those things. But I think that that's not easily accessible. It's not easily accessible to have measures, right, that are accessible to folks that don't present in this very traditional, let's call it traditional ways, or mainstream, right? Or that go along with the mainstream research and the mainstream idea of what neurodivergence is. And then if you add, you know, biculturalism, bilingualism, and try to determine what measures are going to be, honestly, if you have somebody that's monolingual in Spanish, right, that assessment is going to look different. And there's going to be challenges to it because there aren't that many measures. There's not that much flexibility in there. And so if we're talking about like, and not only about the questions themselves, but also the norms behind each of those. So there's that. Our conceptualization of what neurodiversity is, I think is changing. I think we're arriving to a place where the field is completely being overhauled to capture a wider understanding of what neurodiversity means and how it looks and how it shows. And so I think that at this point, because we're letting go of some ideas, we're at this point where a lot of us are doing this, I don't wanna say, you know, kind of in a piecemeal way, but we're all kind of figuring out as we go. And trying to figure out, okay, so this is what we have, how can we adapt it? How may I grab some questions that I know are helpful and how may I add my own stuff that might be helpful, right? So I think accessibility for measures, limitations in being able to consult with people that are doing what you're doing. So for those of us that do culturally specific assessments, there's not that many of us. And so it's an effort, right, to be able to connect with people and bring in that. I think that we're doing a lot of psychoeducation about what assessments are, about neurodiversity, understanding the presentations of that, understanding resources and questioning some of the more mainstream ways of resourcing our clients. I think all of it is challenging right now.
So what, you know, I'm thinking like part of what we're talking about is like kind of tips in a way for neuroaffirmative therapists or therapists who want to move into this space and transition to this. I know, I've been on a journey of like, and you've helped of like connecting with readings that we like really understanding, like, right, some authors who identify as neurodivergent, right, and are sharing their stories and their experiences that we can, you know, read or listen to and really build our understanding. And I think in increasing our toolbox as clinicians, right, as therapists or folks who do this work, so that, because what I've realized is, like, it's just another layer, right? Like, we have the layer of trauma, we have the intersecting identities, we have a layer of neurodivergence, right? And so what do these different layers mean for folks? How do we help them validate their experiences and understand their own experiences from, again, a way that's affirming and, you know, not re-traumatizing folks, right? And not questioning their realities and their experiences when they come in and share this part of them. It's like any other layer, right, of identities that we work with. So I'm wondering, like, what are some suggestions or thoughts that you might have for any therapists listening who are, like, really wanting to move and step into this space, build their understanding? We know as clinicians in APA and the American Psychological Association, I go back to this framework, right? It's increasing your knowledge, awareness, and skills. Right. Like, if you want to move into an area, like, you have to intentionally work on knowledge, awareness, and skills as a therapist. I would add into that, like, our own self reflection, our own stuff, right? Unpacking our own isms, introspection as therapists. But what would you recommend for therapists? And I think this could be a way to transition out of this session today, kind of ending it on a note of, like, what would you recommend for other therapists who are really wanting to move into understanding, developing their own awareness and knowledge, and move into therapists in this way, in this realm?
So I think listening to neurodivergent voices is key. And the way that we can do that is, there's a ton of Facebook groups that we can join as therapists of folks that are doing this work as neurodivergent folks. I think that there's several podcasts out here that are really, really helpful. There's YouTube materials that are very helpful, both as, like, providers, as people, as parents. I can link all of that into our podcast description. There's multiple books, Neurodivergent Mind on Masking Autism, that provide a lot of psychoeducation, very rich psychoeducation on different presentations of autism. There is a workbook on neurodivergent use of DBT skills. There's a recent book that came out on neuroaffirmative assessment for autism in adults. And they have wonderful resources in there. I think consulting and talking to other people that do this work or that have lived experience. Sometimes just, I think that there's so much richness in a lot of those conversations and nuggets that we can take from there. And there's, of course, the webinars and all the professional stuff that we do.
We kind of flipped it. I'm your guest, but we kind of flipped the script and I started asking you a bunch of questions. But I'm glad I was able to be here and we can, start this topic. And I'm happy to be back and have a conversation specifically from the parenting perspective. So I'm looking forward to that piece as well.
Yes, be on the lookout for our interview of Josie around being the parent to neurodivergent children. Thank you so much for joining us, Josie, and thank you all for listening. We hope they have a wonderful weekend and we'll be in touch. Thank you.